decades. In a bunch of different ways, you know, worked in detoxes, I've done worked in fancy rehabs and state run rehabs, so the whole gamut. I would say probably 5 years ago, more, but 5 years ago, I just kind of knew that the rehab industry is really ineffective the way that we do it. It doesn't really work. It's a $50 billion a year thing, and it's basically a 3 to 5% success rate. It depends on who you listen to, but and there is no other area of healthcare that would say, oh, we stabilize cancer 3% of the time, we're good, right? So it was more, you know, kind of a something's wrong here, and we're not serving enough people as long as the conventional wisdom is the only thing is total abstinence forever and go to AA for the rest of your life, which is a nice outcome. I mean, that's good for some people, but there are millions and millions and millions of people who won't enter that system. And there are millions and millions of people who try and it doesn't take root. So I thought, okay, well, we have to diversify offerings of what people do, you know, and how people improve. And one of the ways, one of the things is that improvement matters. So in other words, people like that idea of being totally abstinent and being drug-free, but there are lots of ways that people get better. And there are lots of ways that people address chemical dependencies or mental health or, you know, drug issues or, you know, or whatever. So that's kind of how I started with alternative things like cannabis replacement is one of the things that I think can be really helpful for people. And this ketamine, there's a lot of, I think that the problem is branding, to be honest with you, because there's a lot of compelling research out there from medical professionals who can support ketamine infusions as something that can help some people. Doesn't mean it's a magic wand for all people. It means it's a possibility for some people. But when you say ketamine, people think you're going to a club in an underground rave, right? So what's done with the ketamine actually matters. And what Lamar Odom is doing with ketamine is a medicalized process under supervision of a licensed physician that's very different than ingesting a club drug.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, I don't know why they don't call it Vestiva or something. You know what I mean? Like all those branding allergy medications and stuff that you see on TV because – I don't know. You say ketamine and people already have an image of what that means. Or you say cannabis and people think stoners. The truth is there are lots of people who can be helped by medication assistance or cannabis assistance or psilocybin assistance. And we're in a situation now that is so complex and it's gotten worse and worse and worse with the pandemic. So we're on track for the most overdose deaths in recent history. And one of the things I always say is let us not forget alcohol deaths. It's twice that of opiates. And so we're on target for, I don't know, another additional 25 or 30,000. Alcohol deaths. I'm sure you see lots of problems living near Penn State with alcohol. You would see less problems if they allowed for cannabis with impunity. So in other words, if there were kids who were smoking weed before they went out to party at night, they would drink less and there would be fewer problems. That's a tough idea for people to get their mind around. You know, when I speak to college audiences, I get a lot of emails from parents. You told our kids to smoke weed. I'm like, no, I said cannabis is the safest form of intoxication. That's not really the same thing.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I mean, well, I have kids that age. I'm like, well, no, do your homework and, you know, help an old lady and zip it. But, you know, kids are kids. What are we going to do? Like, ask, you know, expect them to not be kids. That's not really realistic.
Exactly. And what do you think is the biggest challenge about getting this message across?
Well, I think that it's been a cultural hit job for 40 years, that the Nancy Reagan era of just say no, you know, has really, really, it's sort of scratched into the psyche of America, where, well, there is a simple solution to drugs, you just say no. I don't know, you're probably not old enough, but there was a time when that was, when you just said no to sexual activity, and that's how we were going to solve the HIV crisis. That's not how we did it. You know, we did it with harm reduction, public health, needle exchanges, condoms. So I think the hardest message is to get people to understand that mental health is health. It is not anything that is handled very well by the police or the judicial system. You know, the drug war is really ineffective and violent. You just saw yesterday with the, I forget his name, but the police killed him on a drug warrant.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they just went in and, you know, he tried to run and they shot him. It's like, well, what did he do, though? Did he sell weed? Like, what, like, what was his, like, why are we, that's a really bad way to handle a substance misuse issue. And so I think the hardest thing is to get people and, you know, Americans to reframe how they think about drug use. And also how they think about alcohol, because the truth is alcohol does way more damage to the community than any sort of illicit drug. Certainly more than cannabis. And I think we need to have a massive national dialogue and conversation about how we can improve this, because it impacts every family, every single family. I mean, even if people don't directly have a family member, they have a neighbor, something. You know, we're all sort of in this problem, and we haven't done it very well. So I think that that's the shame and the stigma are really, really hard. We have 160 overdose deaths a day. We have over 100 suicides a day from vets. Most of them are intoxicated when they do it. We have over 100,000 deaths to alcohol. And I'm guessing you've never read an obituary that said they died of acute alcoholism.
No, definitely not.
No. And so there's still this thing, and it used to be a thing in the 90s where my mother would be, oh, there's, oh, he died, oh, he had cancer. And we would say, Mom, he had AIDS. Right? And then people started to be okay with, like, dealing with it as a disease and not dealing with it as a moral failing or something shame-based. And that really changed a lot. And so I think that that's probably the biggest hurdle. This is National Mental Health Awareness Month. I bet you're not aware of that.
I knew that. Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean you personally. I just in general. It's like when it's Breast Cancer Month, the NFL wears pink cleats, right? Nobody's doing anything for Mental Health Awareness Month or Overdose Prevention, which is in September, or Recovery Month, which is also in September. So I think that we have a big messaging problem. We have a political problem because governors, oh, they're tough on crime, you know, like that kind of a thing. So, look, it was a runaway locomotive over the last few decades. So somehow we have to stop that and shift it back in a different direction.
Exactly. And what would you say was the most rewarding part about your job?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
What would you say was the most rewarding part about your job?
Well, you know, the helping professions are predominantly women, so social work and nursing. And so most of my individual clients or the clients that I see are young guys that are under 30. Something's not right in their lives. So I would say the most rewarding thing is watching them do well. And they do, not all of them. You know, I mean, I'm not magic, but every once in a while I get a card in the mail. Hey, I got married. Really? Okay. Or, My wife had a baby, you know, like just kind of like normal thing. So I think it's always really rewarding when people resume a normal course of development after mental health issues that have been stabilized and learned how to be managed, and they kind of just go on. They go back to school or learn a trade, or, you know, there's lots of different things that happen for people, but that's, you know, by far the best part of it, you know, for sure. You know, it's like coaching sports.
That's true. I didn't think of it that way.
Well, it is. I mean, when, you know, when you're the football coach, and I've coached a lot of sports too, you know, hey, coach, look, this is my wife, and we just had a thing. Oh, that's awesome. Good for you. You know, when they come back, that kind of thing.
And I think you're doing an incredible job with all you do. So thank you for all you do. And is there anything else you would like to share before I let you go?
I would just, no, just that we, America, like have an open mind, right? Because typically speaking, when people reveal that they have a different road to improvement for themselves, they take a lot of shit, right? Like Demi Lovato, I was like, oh my God, she can't be a young woman trying things out. Like she has to be battered in the media. And he will too. Lamar Odom will take, oh, he's not sober. You know, he's going to take a lot of that stuff. And I don't think it matters. It's like, well, look, he gets to decide. So I think people need to have an open mind about how people recover.
Exactly. And thank you so much for the information and for your time. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week.
Thank you, Sammy. Appreciate it.
Have a good one. Yep.
Have
a good
one. You too. Take care.